Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 675. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about cowboys and covered wagons and Buffalo Bill, the world's largest ball of twine, and the world's largest collection of world's smallest versions of world's largest things, as we go on a road trip to Kansas. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Kansas. Excellent. I'd like to welcome to the show John McKenzie from johnthetraveler.com. And John has come to talk to us about Kansas. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Chris. Glad to be here.
What is your connection to Kansas?
So I originally am from Kansas. I've lived there for about 25, 26 years. Grew up in a small town in the northeast part of Kansas and still have family there.
Can you say the small town, or are you in the witness relocation program? We should not mention this.
It's called St. Mary's. So It's about halfway between Topeka and Manhattan, Kansas.
Excellent. I am sure there are one or two people who are listening to the show who don't have Kansas on their list of places to go. So why are they wrong? Why should somebody think about going to Kansas?
Well, Kansas is one of those states that has a lot of subtle, interesting, kind of peculiar sites. It's definitely a representation of Americana, and the terrain is usually known as flat, but it is a very diverse state, and all of the interesting things seem to be lurking kind of behind the sidelines.
And not on I-70, which is most people's view of Kansas, is my understanding.
Exactly.
Excellent. Where are you going to start us?
There are many different places to go in Kansas that I could have steered people towards, but I thought to really get a sense of what the state is about, I would start in Wichita, which is the largest city. Okay. There is an airport there. The other place that most people would be flying into even get to Kansas would be Kansas City. But I wanted to start with Wichita and kind of do a loop that focused more on the western part of the state.
Okay. Well, and we should say, and we've done another show on Kansas City, but most of the people who live in Kansas City don't live in Kansas, confusingly enough. Kansas City is largely in Missouri. And so that's why it is not the largest city in Kansas, despite the name.
Well, it even gets more confusing because there is actually a Kansas City, Kansas, that I think most people don't realize there are two completely separate cities. Mm-hmm. And it gets really confusing because they're still considered to be the same metro area. Mm-hmm. But there is a separate city in Kansas that used to be called Wyandotte. I don't know why they changed the name, just to make it more confusing. It's in Wyandotte County.
Yep.
But yes, the two cities are right across from each other. But most of the population tends to be in Missouri or in the suburbs south of the city of Kansas City.
So we're going to start in Wichita.
Yes.
And what are we going to do in Wichita?
So Wichita is probably known for its aviation industry. That's one of the biggest things that maybe people have heard of, or some reference to the Wild West. But what I think Wichita is best known for, best to see in Wichita, is the Old Town and some of those Cowtown references. There's an old Cowtown museum. There is the Arkansas River that flows through it. And I know you may be wondering, why did I just say Arkansas? That's because Kansas pronounces that name for the river while it's in the state of Kansas. We still say Arkansas for the state, but we say Arkansas for the river. Mm-hmm. that's unique to Kansans. But in Wichita, there are a couple of things that of interest that people might like to see. As I mentioned, there's the Old Town. It's a replica of the 1880s cow town and highlights farm life and what things might have been like back then.
Is it a living history museum then, sort of thing?
Yeah, it's officially called the Old Cowtown Museum. I should be more clear because that's the official name of the museum, Old Cowtown Museum. That's the museum and the recreation of the old cowtown. But then there's also Old Town, which is just the older part of the downtown. So they're fairly close together. I mean, Wichita is the largest city in Kansas, but it is still fairly compact in terms of for what tourists would maybe want to see.
Well, and I want to pause here for a second, because when people we talk about Kansas being a cow town, I don't think a lot of people necessarily understand why Kansas would be known for cattle, but a lot of the cattle that we're talking about here are cattle from Texas.
Yes.
That would be driven up in the time, the early time of the Old West into Kansas, to Wichita, to Dodge City and some of those places where they would meet the railroad. And so basically there wasn't a railroad yet going down to where the cattle ranches were in Texas. And so those some of the great cattle drives that you read about in like the Lonesome Dove that where they actually drive them all the way up to Montana in that book. But basically those are driving them up to Kansas to put them on the railroad to ship them back east.
Yes. And the Chisholm Trail is one that I know some people may have heard of from their high school history course, but that
also
is
also a great John Wayne movie, by the way.
So yes, that is the cowtown connection. And even today there's Kansas is known for having a lot of feedlots and cows. And of course we pride ourselves in our steaks if you are a meat eater.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you said the thing that people know Kansas or Wichita most for, I think that's probably the song, I Was a Lineman for the County. Isn't that where
yes.
He's in Wichita?
The Wichita Lineman, yes. Glenn Campbell. That's another. And actually, there's a lot
I'm
of
showing my age when I say that. I know. I understand.
Yes. Well, there's also a connection that people may not know. The first Pizza Hut was developed in a small building on the Wichita State University campus. And I think that building is still there, but not the Pizza Hut. There are Pizza Huts, but the headquarters are no longer in Wichita. But it did start there.
Huh. Interesting. I did not know that.
Lots of little trivia facts about Kansas that may no longer the history and the people and things like that are connected to it, but maybe are no longer visible or are there.
Mm-hmm. So did you want to start at the cowtown or the old town?
Well, I was going to hop around some of the different things in the city and talk about just what's there. So Old Town has several, it's really more of a facades of buildings that are still kept up. There are a few restaurants and I mean nice restaurants and shops and things like that. I think there's lots of historical markers that talk about the various trails and the history of the cowtown and things like that.
Okay.
The old town is mainly just for a pleasant place to be and explore and walk around. It's not that big, so you can do it fairly quickly.
Okay.
And if you're staying there, it's a good place to go out in the evening. One of the things that has become very, very popular to see is a statue called the Keeper of the Plains. And it's not too far from downtown. It's probably easier to drive there. It's on a point on the Arkansas River where the Big and Little Arkansas Rivers come together. And it's become a symbol of the city. It's on a Native American sacred site. And so they've made it into a small park. And it is a very picturesque little area. So that's one thing that I would say is a Wichita must see. I tend to be a brewery person. So I would say there is the River City Brewing Company that is in the Old Town. They actually have really good food. There's also a place called The Public at the Brickyard. And actually, another thing that I should have mentioned is the Museum of World Treasures. If you're down in the Old Town, it's a museum that houses pieces of all sorts of different history from all over the world. I think for people from Kansas, it's a good way to get that glimpse of what is in the rest of the world, because they don't get, they're far from everything else. But
centrally located was the term that I was thinking was appropriate.
Exactly. But that might be of interest if you're there to see the museum. I'm a little bit less of a museum person unless I'm in a smaller city and have time. Then I prefer to go around and check out whatever museums are there, no matter what the subject matter is. But that is right there in the Old Town.
Okay. And it looks like it is both a natural history museum with fossils as well as a history museum with things from various time periods.
And yes. And I don't know if some of the fossils are actually from Kansas, but I will talk about some of that later, because when we go further west, there will be some specific fossil museums and places to see that are related to fossils.
Okay.
Other things to see in Wichita are the Kansas Aviation Museum. Again, if you are interested in the history of aircraft, the airline industry is still a big employer there in Wichita.
And I'm not familiar, at least off the top of my head, with the aviation connection. What aviation companies are out of Wichita?
Cessna is one.
I've heard of them. Okay.
One big one. I think Boeing was there. I believe they are no longer.
I'm seeing Beechcraft and Bombardier and Spirit Aerosystems. Systems. Okay.
Actually, Kansas in general played an important part in the World War II. Mm-hmm. There were several Air Force bases that popped up in various places that served war efforts. And so Wichita boomed at that time, in a large part because of that.
Wow, and I actually saw a list of, since 1920, Wichita aircraft manufacturers, and it's just honestly too long a list to read on the show. So, wow, that's interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah, I think with a lot of these things, if somebody is particularly interested in the aircraft industry, you could spend your entire time in Wichita and do different things related to that. So there are several things like that in Kansas that, if you're really interested in fossils, then there are plenty of places to stop along the way. Or if you want to see certain land formations or prairie wildflowers or things like that, or Wild West history.
Okay.
I was going to kind of dabble through what is on offer to see, because it's hard to really map out an itinerary without knowing who the people are that are going to go see it. So that's kind of where I had my struggle. But anyway.
So we're going to leave the aviation buffs at the Kansas Aviation Museum then, and we'll move on.
Yes. Another place that I would not have thought of as being something you would want to see in Kansas, but it has very good ratings, and it's called Botanica. It's actually a huge wild botanical gardens in Wichita. It's won several awards and it's rated very well. So that would be something to check out if you are there and enjoy botanical gardens.
Okay.
There's also the Kansas Arboretum. This is kind of an aside. It's south of Wichita, about an hour. And that is the Kansas Arboretum. Again, if you are a outdoor plants and flowers enthusiast, then those places should be on your radar. And another thing that is pretty much all over most small towns in Kansas, but in Wichita there would be a large collection of them, would be antique shops. So if you are in the market for going around to antique stores and seeing what you might find, Wichita has several. And in particular, there's a small town called Kichai, which is really, it's a suburb of Wichita, but it has some antique shops as well. And that's just northeast of Wichita, just a few miles.
Okay.
That's an overview of Wichita. It's also, because it's the largest city, there are more options of places to eat and things to do. Bars, restaurants, breweries to go check out there, because once we leave Wichita, it will be getting a little bit more sparsely populated.
Okay.
What I thought would be the most logical next stop isn't too far from Wichita. It's about an hour drive northwest, and it's a city called Hutchinson. And it is known primarily for having the Kansas Cosmosphere Space Museum, which is pretty much second to the NASA Museum in D.C. It's also the location of the Kansas State Fair. So if people really are into state fairs or just want to see a representation of the entire state, they may want to plan their vacation around the time that the fair is happening, which is about early September. Usually it's the week after Labor Day. And that's also a good time to come to Kansas just because the weather is still, it's not too hot, it's not cold yet, and it's a little less unpredictable than the spring when you have storm season. So September would probably be a good time to come see what some of these local festivals and events and things like that that are happening. And those vary from town to town, but there do tend to be a lot of them in the fall.
Well, and I was looking with why a space museum in Kansas, other than the fact that Kansas has a lot of space. But it appears that Dr. Goddard, one of the early founders in America's space program, was from Hutchinson, Kansas.
Yes. And Kansas does tend to have a lot of connections to notable people that I don't think people know that they may be from Kansas or have a Kansas connection. But ultimately, I find myself telling people, yeah, that person is from Kansas, and or this started in Kansas, or there's a lot of stories and tales around that that I could throw in as we travel. But yes, that's probably the only reason that that would be located there.
Actually, I think I may have that wrong.
I thought it was.
They have his lab recreated there, but I am not finding that he is from Kansas.
Yeah, but the Kansas, I think it's just called the Cosmosphere now. When I was growing up, it was called the Kansas Cosmosphere, but I think they wanted to say it's not just for Kansas. But they have a lot of space memorabilia, and it definitely is an interesting place to go if you're there. The other thing that's interesting that really is worth going up to Hutchinson for these two things is what is called Strataka, which is the underground salt mine.
Oh.
Kansas used to be, or most of western Kansas back a long time ago, there was an ocean, an inland ocean that covered much of the western two-thirds of Kansas. And so as that started to recede, it yielded a lot of different things, such as this salt mines. So a lot of salt is actually mined in central Kansas. And then as we go west, I will talk about some of the chalk formations that are left over from that time.
Well, and I do want to specify that when we say that it was a long time ago, we're not talking about when I was a kid. We're talking about back in paleontological time.
Yes, yeah. And prehistoric times is probably the best.
Even longer ago than that.
So another little thing on your way from Wichita to Hutchinson that you might want to stop at, it's only 15 minutes from Hutchinson before you get there, is a small Amish community called Yoder.
Huh.
And I'm talking maybe two or three streets, so you can pull up and walk around, and there's a few antique stores, there's a bakery, a few shops, and you'll hopefully see the mix of cars and maybe some people on buggies and horses. So you'll see that in Hutchinson too, but to a lesser degree than you would in these towns around like Yoder. But Yoder in particular is specifically known as an Amish community. There are also several Mennonite communities in the area. So that could be something of interest to people to see the different cultures that live around Hutchinson.
I always think of the Mennonite and the Amish being more in Ohio and Pennsylvania. I'm not expected to find a Yoder, Kansas.
Yeah. Yeah. And the population of these groups is relatively small when you think of the population of Kansas in general, but it's definitely a population that you would notice traveling through that area.
Okay.
There are a few other things in the area. There is a bison ranch if people want to get up close with a bison or a buffalo, as most of us say, but it's technically a bison. And there's also an exotic animal farm, and there is a zoo in Hutchinson as well. So Kansas seems to have a lot of zoos. I don't know if I would necessarily want to go travel to zoos when I'm on vacation, but if people enjoy going to zoos, there's one there. There's one in Wichita. Most of the larger cities in Kansas have a zoo. And before we leave Hutchinson, one small thing that that people from outside the Midwest may not be familiar with is the grain elevator. So these are very tall towers. Sometimes they're called Kansas skyscrapers or prairie skyscrapers. Mm-hmm. Hutchinson has one that I think technically it's the second longest one in the world, the longest one being in Wichita. But they have had a friendly feud, I think, about which one is the longest. But in Hutchinson, you'll probably notice it the most because it's very wide and it just goes on for a long time. But if you're not familiar with what a grain elevator even is or looks like, then it might be something of interest to see. And it makes for some interesting picturesque moments to prove that you're in, you know, you're in Kansas when you see a grain elevator for sure.
Okay. We'll check off that question off our checklist here. Well, and for people who don't know, elevator seems like an odd name there. It's just a large grain storage place where they keep it dry and hopefully from blowing up, because that can happen with grain elevators. And it is usually on the railroad tracks so that it's ready for shipment someplace.
Exactly. And some places, especially driving in further west, you'll see the grain elevator towns where, because the terrain is mostly flat, you can drive for miles and see each town because you see this grain elevator sticking up off the horizon.
Grain elevator and a water tower. And
yes, yes.
Everything
but
else
the grain
is one
elevator
story,
is much larger. And so you can spot them from miles and miles away.
Yep.
But yes, if it wasn't obvious, to take a trip in Kansas, you're going to need a car. I'm sure Wichita City has a public bus system, but you're still probably going to want to have a car no matter where you are in the state, just to be able to get around. After Hutchinson, I thought I would take people kind of on a zigzag tour to Dodge City.
Okay.
Depending on how much people want to be in the car, there's a lot of different options that we can take. So I'll include all of the optional things to lay it out there. So the first thing is called Cheyenne Bottoms, and it is a natural wetlands area, and it's near Great Bend. It's a wildlife refuge that was found, I mean, it's naturally occurring there between Claflin and Great Bend, and you can see a lot of different waterfowls, marshlands, and grasses there. So again, for the people that enjoy the natural wetlands and outdoors things, that might be worth the detour. And if you're going there, you'll pass through a little town called Claflin, and there is an what I would call an institution there called Miller's, and they've redone the entire downtown in kind of an old style facades of buildings to look like yesteryear, so to speak. So there's a furniture I think they're a furniture store, but they've redone a lot of the facades in the downtown. So if you're driving through there, that's one thing about Kansas, is these little towns. Some of the downtowns have some sort of unique thing about them to check out as you're passing through them.
Okay.
So after Cheyenne Bottoms, if you're going that route, you can stop at Pawnee Rock, which is just a little precipice on the outside of the little tiny town called Pawnee Rock. But if you can imagine back in the day, which I would say in the 1800s, during when there was a lot of settlers going west, they would stop at this rock and it would offer a way for them to look out and see what's ahead, because you can see for miles and miles around. It also, before that, was a source of meeting point for Indians in the area. Mm-hmm. So Pawnee Indians, and I think there was a battle in that area as well between other tribes of Indians. So that was a notable place in Kansas. When you're there now, it's just a very windy rock outcropping that looks out over a vast area. But what I like to think of is for you to step back into history and try to envision settlers coming across in a covered wagon And that visual is what I kind of appreciate when I see sites like this. Continuing on, I wanted to talk about Fort Larned. And again, this is still kind of part of that detour. If you wanted to see Cheyenne Bottoms, you might want to go up to Fort Larned, which is an hour away from Dodge City. Fort Larned is a national historic site. So there is actually U.S. Park Service there. And it's an old fort from, I'd say, the 1860s to 70s. And it's very well preserved. Well, the grounds are certainly set up like they were at that time. They've, of course, done a lot of remodeling to make it look like it's not falling apart. But it's it's interesting because it really is in the middle of nowhere, as many of these places are. And that might be because it's a national historic site. So it's technically part of the National Park Service. People who are collecting their national parks will want to stop there for sure. Continuing on, there is a little town called Kinsley that is probably notable for having a large sign saying Midway, USA. And it bills itself as being halfway between San Francisco and New York.
Oh, okay.
There's a tiny park near that sign. I think the origin of it or the popularity of it came from its place on the Saturday Evening Post back in the late 30s when there were two world's fairs, one in San Francisco and one in New York. And so Kinsley was like, okay, we are right in the middle. So this is one of the things about Kansas. There are lots of little designations of things like that or unusual attractions. Some people may have heard of the largest ball of twine, which is not part of my itinerary, unless you really want to go there, I can mention it later. But
okay, but where is the largest ball of twine? You have to tell
me. So the one in Kansas is technically the largest ball of sisal twine. It's in Cocker City. They determined the twine. There's another twine ball in Texas that is bigger, and so they had to designate the type of twine. They had to get it down to it's the particular kind of twine. So yes, this is. But those kinds of sites, the largest, whatever, there are plenty of places in Kansas like that, too.
Well, when you were talking about Fort Larned, you were saying, for instance, out of here in the middle of nowhere. But we have to remember that this wasn't the middle of nowhere before. It was the path that you needed to get to somewhere. And so this exactly. fort, for instance, was there guarding the Santa Fe Trail. Really a lot of the important covered wagon trails went through mm-hmm. Kansas, and the Santa Fe Trail being an even older mm-hmm. trail than that. And you mentioned Pawnee Rock. It was also someplace that was used in the Indian Wars when, it usually mm-hmm. was caused by the government, screwing up and reneging on some treaty, which is how most of those caused. But a lot of the Plains Indians, the Pawnee, the Comanche, the Arapaho, Cheyenne, and such would have been in this area. And so that's why this fort was busy at that time, and this was a very central place in the U.S., not just geographically, but in terms of as the U.S. was expanding, and which is, of course, what was causing the Indian Wars, a lot of that was happening in Kansas.
Yes, and I should say that so you can follow some roads that follow along the Santa Fe Trail, and in northeastern Kansas, we have the Oregon Trail, and there mm-hmm. are still ruts that you can see, depressions in the ground from when all of those wagon trains went across. There were so many people going on the same trail that the ruts became part of the land that it's still there today, something that some people might be interested in.
Where would we see that? You're talking to one of those people.
Yeah. So they're kind of scattered all over the place, but mm-hmm. one of the places, at least that's near where I'm familiar with, it's actually in eastern Kansas near Lawrence, Baldwin City. Blackjack Battlefield is actually, it's a good place because you can see it's a battlefield. So there's that historic site. And then across, you can see some ruts. Some of the road would be following the Santa Fe Trail, and there might be some chances to see ruts there. But I think most of them are probably in northeastern Kansas. Yeah, the Blackjack place is probably the best reference that I would give.
Okay.
Another detour from Kinsley could be to Greensburg. So Greensburg is about 45 to 50 minutes from Dodge City, and it is possibly best known for a huge tornado that hit in 2007 and destroyed most of the town. There were, I think, 12 people that died, and it flattened the town. But since then, they have done a lot of rebuilding, and it has, at least it had at a time, a designation of one of the largest number of LEED certified buildings per capita in probably in the world, because it was being rebuilt. I think what they wanted to do is they tried to raise money because their name has got green in it. They wanted to make it a green city. So that's how that started. And they had they were on a television show where they talked about different environmental designs and sustainable building. But I'm sure right now, even it's been 12 years, there's still probably some evidence of the tornado. But one of the things, the reason to go there would be to see the world's largest hand-dug well that was recently, again, some of those unusual things that if people really want to see something different, this would probably be one of them. And they rebuilt the museum after the tornado, and it's something you can go and check out. And you can't go all the way to the bottom, but you can see the depth of how much work that must have been to actually dig a well that deep by hand. That is, yeah, about 45 minutes from Dodge City. So getting into Dodge City, I think most people have at least heard of Dodge City and make a connotation of it with the Wild West and some of the famous or infamous people like Wyatt Earp, Doc Holliday, and people like that. So Dodge City is definitely known for its Boot Hill, which is a cemetery where a lot of the legends of Wild West are buried, supposedly with their boots on, which I think is how they got its name. But they have an old town that's recreated from the frontier days there, and they have a lot of reenactments of shootouts and kind of the full Wild West experience. So again, if people are interested in checking out what was it like to live in a town with saloons and shootouts and Wild West, that is probably the destination of choice. There's also a fort there, Fort Dodge, and it is a restored former fort with lots of different buildings and historical plaques and a little museum. There's also a wax museum of famous Wild West characters, if that is of interest. They do have a rodeo in Dodge City, so I'm not sure of the schedule, but that would be something that could try to coordinate with a visit to Dodge City. Another thing outside of Dodge City that is notable, especially if you're driving in from the northeast, would be the feedlots.
Ooh.
They are huge. You might smell them as well.
Yes.
But depending on which way the wind blows. And speaking of wind, I think Dodge City is, at least it has been officially designated as the windiest city in the U.S. Much windier than what people think of as Chicago, which is not...
Well, Chicago, yeah, was named for its politics, not its weather.
Yeah, most people don't know that. But yeah, Dodge City is actually considered one of the windiest cities. And it's true. It is windy in general in western Kansas. So that is in Dodge City. And Dodge City is probably about 30 to 40,000 in population. So again, one of the population centers in western Kansas, better chance of finding more variety of restaurants. They just opened a brewery there. I haven't been to it, but it sounds interesting. And they have a distillery as well, all right within a block of Boot Hill. So much smaller than Wichita. So you could probably park downtown and walk around and see all of these things in a fairly short amount of time. So after Dodge City, there is another couple ways to get to our next destination. Really, the destination is more of a place to, probably a likely place to stay the night. There are a few things to see there, but this segment of the trip is probably my favorite. It showcases the chalk formations and more of the Kansas Badlands. So to get there, you would either go north and west through Ness City and Beeler and Dighton, or you could go through Garden City. Garden City is another larger city. It's got probably its biggest claim to fame is a very large swimming pool, public swimming pool, that used to be considered the largest outdoor free concrete municipal pool. They charge now for it because they had to do a renovation project. But it is the size of a football field, and actually it may be in danger of not being around too much longer because it's just such a large volume of water that they need to constantly put in and maintain it. But that is something there. There's also an interesting for Kansas, which is not quite as population diverse as other states, but there's a very large population of Southeast Asians and Hispanic population in Garden City. And so you might be able to find some good Vietnamese restaurants there, because in the 70s and 80s, there was a large influx of population in that area. And Garden City used to be a small town of about 15,000 people, and it doubled within probably 10 years. And there was a housing shortage and all sorts of things were happening there. Now it's tapered off a little bit. But anyway, that's probably your last chance to get not just Vietnamese food, but most kinds of conveniences. There's a few small towns between there and the next place. But
well, and you were talking about diversity. If you're in Dodge City, that might be a great place to get Mexican food, because that's a city where 57% of the population has some Hispanic blood. They're of Hispanic origin.
And even in the small towns in that area, there is, I mean, I've stopped in tiny little towns, which in Kansas, typically you would find maybe one cafe that's open from 11 to 2, if that, and they would be serving pretty basic Midwestern food that people like the fried chicken and hamburgers and stuff like that. But in some of these small towns out in southwestern Kansas, they do have a full menu. I went to a town of less than 1,000 people, and they had a really good Mexican food menu. So it's definitely something that I think, being from Kansas and not being used to that many options for ethnic food, it was neat to see that there are some really good little mom and pop cafes in some of these small towns. So if you go through Garden City, you would turn north and head towards Scott City. And in Scott City, there is a museum that relates to some ruins that are further north. So the reason we're talking about Scott City first is because you'll have to go through there before you get to the actual ruins. But there's a museum called the El Cuartalejo Museum. So they had discovered a Plains Apache village from, I think it was the 1660s, north of Scott City at the Lake Scott State Park. You can make a quick stop there if you wanted to go to the museum. Check that out. Check out the ruins. It's just foundations of buildings or pueblos around this lake. But not too far from there is where our next stop would be. And I am suggesting a stop at a little place called the Keystone Gallery. It is a tiny museum, the only thing on the road, I believe, between Lake Scott and the next town of Oakley. And the people there have created a small fossil museum, and they have found very, again, prehistoric fossils from this former inland ocean and have several of them on display. And for a tiny little rural out in the middle of nowhere museum, it's quite impressive. And the owners have been on television before, but they're very helpful in giving you directions to the Badlands sites in the area. So not far from there is the Monument Rocks National Natural Landmark. And these are the most stark remnants of this former prairie ocean. They're about six or seven different formations that just completely stick up from flat grounds that just have different arches and curves and formations. Something very unusual to see in the middle of flat Kansas.
Yeah, this does not look like Kansas. This looks like Arizona.
Yeah, and it's just fascinating. Again, coming from a state that is predominantly...
Or the cliffs of Dover, because it's chalk.
Yeah, it's chalk. It's chalk formations. Hmm. And so in a lot of these chalk beds that they found a lot of fossils. So this drive, it's really not too far. It's on back gravel dirt roads. So if it's raining, I would probably not suggest taking your rental car, or unless you have a hefty truck or four-wheel drive or something, I probably would not suggest doing it in the rain, which I realize you can't plan for. But if the weather is dry and clear, it's absolutely gorgeous any time of day. But a lot of people go there in the evening to see sunset, or even in the evening if it's a full moon. Probably one of the most stark, beautiful sights that I've seen in the state. Definitely my favorite in the whole state. And it's very quiet out there. There's certainly a few people that stop by once in a while, but it's not very touristy because it's far away from anything. After that, it's probably been a long day, so I would continue on to Oakley, which is the next town that you'll get to if you continue north. And Oakley does have a couple things to see. There is the Buffalo Bill Cultural Center, and there's a large bronze statue of a buffalo that overlooks the town and the prairie around it. And there is another museum there called the Fick Fossil Museum, dedicated to all the fossils that they've found in the area. And in Oakley, there's a little drive through called Don's. That's kind of the old fashioned drive up. At least they did the last time I was there. They put your tray on your window like they did in the 50s and 60s. Next day would be going to Hays. And this is another trip where we're going to visit another of the Kansas Badlands site. Now, it might be that people just want to pick one and do the one site and not have to do both. I would suggest Monument Rocks if you just pick one. But for those who want to check out the other ones, you would head east on I-70 just for a little bit and go to Quinter and then head south to Castle Rock. And this is a little bit different than Monument Rocks in that it's more Badlands. You can go to there's some rocky outcroppings and you can see on a clear day, I think you might even be able to see all the way to Oklahoma, which is still quite a ways south. There's one pillar and the rest are more of the Badlands that you could climb around. They may not allow climbing anymore, certainly not on the single pillar that is the Castle Rock, but it is a Badlands formation. On your way, you could either return the same way or continue on the back gravel roads through to Waukini. There are a few stone, they're carved in stone, what we call in Kansas post rock. So a lot of the native stone that is found in the state has been used for fence posting. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, they were trail markers. So there's a little known trail called the Butterfield Trail that went through this part of the state. And there are a few little markers that you can still see that say, I think it says BO, which is the Butterfield Overland Trail.
Okay. Yeah. And the, so Castle Rock is also on the Overland Trail.
Yes.
And that is also the route of the Pony Express was the Overland Trail.
Yes. Okay. And kind of a little bit off the geographical topic of where we are, but there is a Pony Express Museum in Kansas, in northeastern Kansas, near a community called Hanover. So throwing that out for people that want to focus on trails and Pony Express things. So after Castle Rock, you would head through these back gravel roads. There is a winery called the Shiloh Vineyard. And Kansas is not a place that most people would associate with making wine, but We do have some vineyards here and there. Not all of the grapes are necessarily grown there, But there is a certain percentage that has to be grown there to designate it as an official Kansas grown winery. And I believe this is one of them. But some people have said that it's even coming from wine country, they thought this was impressive, especially for being in the middle of the country. So continuing back onto the highway, I'm only suggesting people go back to I-70 just to make some time after driving around the rural gravel roads for a while. You're going to head to Hays. And if you wanted to stop in a town called Ellis, just west of Hays, that is known for one of two of Walter Chrysler's boyhood homes, the other being a town called Walmego, which is near where I'm from. So there's a bit of a fight between the two communities about which one wants to claim that title, but I'll just throw it out there and say they both do. And if you are into Chrysler and want to see his boyhood homes, you can make a trip to both. But in Hays is a college town of about 20 to 25,000 people. It has what I would consider one of the best museums in Kansas called the Sternberg Museum of Natural History, best known for its fossil of a fish within a fish. So it's just Like it sounds.
It's kind of like the early turducken sort of thing.
Yeah. And it is pretty impressive. And it's just, for a small town museum, I thought it was very well done. It would fit in very well in amidst, you know, a larger city museum. Certainly, you have a lot of opportunity to get the history and the details of all of these fossils. And there's a lot of interactive exhibits for children and different groups. So they make it very interactive and educational. Also in Hays it's Fort Hays State University, but the name came from the original fort. So again, another town that was a fort, Fort Hays. So it's a state historic site. In the area are many small towns that were settled by Volga Germans, so the Volga River in Russia, but the communities speak German, so they were German-speaking Russians that moved to western Kansas and set up communities. And there are, probably on a clear day from a taller place, you could see these church spires dotting the countryside. Most of the towns have very German names, like Munger and Pfeiffer, spelled Pfeiffer, P-F-E-I-F-E-R, but it's pronounced Pfeiffer. Liebenthal, Schenchen. So those are some communities in the area if one wanted to take a loop drive and take in all of these churches. Again, antiques are popular here as well. So if you're antiquing, you can check out some of the Hays antiques. And I would recommend going to Jella's Brewery. It's G-E-L-L-A-S. And they have really good food and, as the name suggests, beer. After that, you're probably going to want to head just down the road to the town of Victoria to St. Fidelis Catholic Church. Another one of those churches, but this one has the specific distinction of being called the Cathedral of the Plains.
Ah, okay.
That some people may have heard of. It is right off of I-70, so it's possible that people could stop quickly off if they're trying to make a quicker trip through the state. This is one thing to see. Yes, William Jennings Bryan dubbed that church the Cathedral of the Plains, and it's definitely quite a large church inside and out in the community of Victoria. I am taking you next to Abilene. If you wanted to just go straight on the interstate, you could do that. But if you want to see some of these off the beaten track attractions, I have another itinerary that goes through Wilson, which has the world's largest Czech egg. and that is Czech as in Czech Republic, because it is one of two Czech communities in the state, the other being a town called Cuba. Wilson and Cuba do not sound like Czech names at all, so I don't know why they didn't name them something like Prague. But one place that might be worth the detour, even without these other places, is called Lucas. It's about 21, 22 minutes north from the interstate. And Lucas is originally the home of what is called the Garden of Eden. A very eccentric man by the name of Dinsmore created this sculpture garden replica of the biblical Garden of Eden and made everything by hand. And he was basically the Kansas's original grassroots artist, you could say. And as a result of this obscure tourist attraction, the town has embraced it and decided to kind of become, or maybe it just happened, it's become a home of grassroots art for the state. So there are things like, there's the Bowl Plaza, and that is B-O-W-L as in toilet bowl, because it is a public restroom that has been decked out in all sorts of different mosaics and art. There is the Grassroots Art Center. There's other signs around the town of public art that might be worth seeing. And there's also it's a mobile museum, but it's based in Lucas. And it is the world's largest collection of the smallest version of the world's largest things. So if that name in and of itself doesn't encapsulate the kinds of things that Kansas has, I don't know what will. So you may want to check that out to see if it's there on the road. On your way back towards Abilene, you have a couple options. You could swing by the ghost town of Denmark, and they are trying to recreate that as some of the buildings were starting to fall down. But it's a good example of community pride. And the town is so small that it maybe has a few houses, but the community surrounds the entire area. So I personally like to go see ghost towns, small towns, abandoned towns, and things like that. So this was a highlight for me. And if it's on a weekend and towards the evening and you're near a town called Sylvan Grove, I would suggest going to the Fly Boy Brewery, because I think I've had the best steak in Kansas there, but it's only open certain times. It's in an old, I think it's an old apothecary or old pharmacy building or bank building, maybe combo, in the downtown. The next stop is going to be Mushroom Rock State Park. So there's two places in Kansas that have these rock outcroppings, and they are what they sound like, mushroom rocks. It's a shape of giant rock mushrooms. And Mushroom Rock is probably the smallest state park in Kansas. So it's pretty easy to see. It's not too far from the interstate either way. I would recommend that one. But there is also Rock City, which is more of the similar type of rock outcroppings. And these rocks are, they're Dakota sandstone. So they're technically called concretions, mm-hmm. but that is worth a quick stop before you head on into Abilene. Now, Abilene has a lot of history as well. It's best known for being the boyhood home of one of our presidents, Dwight D. Eisenhower.
Yeah. Or Dwight Eisenhower.
Yes. And it has the presidential library and museum and boyhood home. But Abilene itself has a few other attractions as well that make it worth, you know, after you check out the Eisenhower things, you can look at a couple of mansions.
Including the Eisenhower Library, I think, is in Abilene too. Is that correct?
Yes. It's all together in one complex.
Okay.
So it's the boyhood home, the presidential library, and the museum and archives.
If you are a history buff, I do recommend all of the presidential libraries. I think they're fascinating. There is a presidential library passport you can even collect.
Oh, good. I didn't know that. I was in Austin, Texas, and that was my first presidential library for Lyndon Johnson, and I really was impressed. So I think I need to go back and actually, I might as well mention, I know you had Kansas City, but the Truman Library would be in Independence, which isn't too far away from
Independence, Missouri, right?
In Missouri, but it's mm-hmm. the Kansas City area. So if you wanted to do your presidential library visits, there's two that are relatively close together.
Well, or if you're doing your covered wagon trails, a lot of those start in Kansas City, in Independence,
yeah.
Missouri. Rather.
Independence, yes. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the history goes through here. So for Abilene, there are a few other museums there that are not necessarily independently worth visiting, or I wouldn't go out of my way to go there. But since everything is there, there's the Greyhound Hall of Fame. I'm writing the dog, the race dog, not the bus. And there is the Museum of Independent Telephony. So that is another museum there. And then there's the County Museum. I think it's actually part of the Dickinson County Museum complex. So there's a carousel there as well. There are several things right all together, so it would make a quick trip. The Seeley Mansion and the Liebold Mansion are two houses that are worth checking out as well when you're there. And if you like chocolate, you might want to go to the Russell Stover Chocolate Factory Outlet just on the outskirts of Abilene. And they have discounted chocolate and an ice cream store. And Russell Stover, the man, is from a tiny town called Alton. And so they still make chocolate here in Kansas. The last few things to mention are going back to Wichita. I could take another detour through Council Grove. Council Grove is the site of an 1825 meeting between the Great and Little Osage Indian tribes, and that kind of established the right-of-way for the Santa Fe Trail to go through there. It was a rendezvous point for people. They also have some historical sites, like there's a calaboose, which is a prison for cowboys. There's a small park. There's a historic elm tree and a statue and a place called the Hayes House that you can get food. The Tallgrass Prairie National Preserve is worth the drive south back to Wichita because it is it's a tallgrass prairie. It's a unique natural landscape that is in this area. Cottonwood Falls, Kansas is home to a historic courthouse. There's lots of shops and they do outdoor music performances here. And then also on the prairie, they'll have a symphony on the prairie. So people might want to check that out. The Flint Hills Byway continues through a little town called Matfield Green. And you could continue to the town of Cassidy and then head back to Wichita. Now, there are a few places that I couldn't mention because they were in other parts of the state. Certainly Lawrence, Kansas, that could be combined with a Kansas City trip. So that's why I didn't focus on that.
A significant site in terms of pre-Civil War history and bleeding Kansas and the that sort of history in that area. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. And Lawrence is known for Kansas, the University of Kansas, or KU as we call it. And that was considered the birthplace of basketball, James Naismith. The campus has several museums that would be of interest to people. There's nightlife, there's a brewery, there's the Massachusetts Street, has all the shops and everything. Comanche the Horse, which was the last survivor of the Little Bighorn Battle, is there at one of the museums there on campus. And then in Topeka, it's the capital city. So there's the Capitol building, which was modeled after the Washington, D.C. Capitol. Inside the Capitol, you can go in and look at the murals by John Stuart Curry. One of them is an iconic painting of John Brown in a kind of an angry state. I know I've seen this picture before. The band Kansas has it on their one of their album, mm-hmm. Dust in the Wind, I believe. So those murals are there in the Capitol building. Topeka is the site of the Brown versus the Board of Education, and it is now a historic site. There is the Evel Knievel Museum. There is the Kansas Historical Society, Combat Air Museum, and the Equality House, which is a rainbow-painted house across from the well-known, unfortunately, Westboro Baptist Church. And then there's Truck Henge, which is another random installation of old trucks. Just running through a couple other cities, Atchison, home of Amelia Earhart, and crop art in the fields nearby.
I'm going to cut you off here. Okay. Right. We have run out of time. Okay. There are a lot of other places that we could talk about in Kansas. I just ran into somebody who drove through Kansas the other day, and they were in some random town on the Kansas-Oklahoma border, Coffeeville, and started mm-hmm. noticing outlines on the streets, and it's where the Dalton gang was killed. And you know, lots of history happened in this place and lots of people from here. But we're not going to cover it all on this show. I'm going to get you to your wrap-up questions. If you had to say what the prettiest spot was in Kansas, you're standing at the prettiest spot. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
I would be at Monument Rocks looking through one of the arches at an oncoming thunderstorm.
Excellent. And if I said one thing that makes you laugh and say only in Kansas...
Finding a museum or an artifact that is the world's smallest random whatever thing.
I think it's hard to top the world's largest museum of smallest large things. I don't even think I got that right, but that's a hard one to parse even. Excellent. Yeah. And if you had to summarize Kansas in three words.
Subtle.
Okay.
Misunderstood.
Okay.
And peaceful.
Okay. Excellent. And our guest again has been John McKenzie from johnthetraveler.com. John, do you have a post on Kansas that we should send people to?
I wrote about visiting my final four counties. So the post is just called The Final Four.
Excellent. We'll put a link to that in the show notes, John. Thank you so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Kansas.
Thank you so much.
This show is already over an hour, so we're going to skip the news of the community, and we're just going to thank you so much for listening. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. For your travel credit card needs, don't forget mytravelcreditcard.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today.